This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Friday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. I would say getting up with us a minute earlier today. Ben, what happened? How did we get in a minute earlier on the show? It's 5:59 and 27 seconds right now. What happened?
I'm an idiot who can't tell time.
Oh, okay.
So, I didn't notice.
All right, gotcha.
You sound like you're an instrument of the man.
Yes.
I'll tell you what, I'm filing a report with the Sports Radio Workers Union 523.
Ben was one of us, Seth. It turns out he's just a suit in a hoodie is what he is right now.
A suit in a hoodie.
That's all he
the
is.
The worst kind of sports commentator.
You're
the Andrew Whitworth of Sports Radio 610.
That's all he is, man. Just a vessel for the man. Getting us in. There we go. Now it's 6 o'clock. Whew, I'm bushed.
Just kind of sit up.
Who are the hoodie guys? Who are the guys who wear hoodies on sports television with underneath their suit? Orlovsky
and Whitworth are the big two. I like that look. I do that when Amy and I go out sometimes. I'll probably do that tonight when we go out to dinner for Valentine's Day. It's a comfortable look, man. You don't feel like you're super dressed up.
It's the mullet of 2025.
Business in the front. Party kind of over the back. Yes.
Business on the torso, but also party on the torso.
Hell yeah.
And dangling out behind.
Dude,
yeah.
My torso is one big party. Yes, absolutely. How you feeling, man?
Since the Euros stole the mullet from us.
They did.
And then made it hip again.
They thieved it.
So these damn kids these days don't even understand they're being owned by the Euros.
That's right.
when they wear their mullets.
Yeah, go back and watch any documentary about the 80s or that took place during the 80s. That's when the mullet was king. That's when we owned the mullet back in the day. How you doing, man? Happy Valentine's
Day. I'm good. I was actually very pleased with Nick Cayley's press conference yesterday.
Yes.
And I didn't expect him to give a whole bunch up about the scheme, but I thought my overarching good feel and good vibe about that press conference was that Nick Cayley is a guy who, very much more so than Bobby Slowick, I think just believes in his core that it all starts up front, and it starts with the blocking and the pass protection and everything else, that he's just much more of a nuts and bolts guy.
Yeah.
And not that Bobby Slowick isn't smart or can't go on to do good things in his future. I just feel like Cayley's just, he's more of the actual blue collar, let's teach this technique right, you get the fundamentals right, and then we can start doing other stuff.
Yeah.
And it just, that part of it felt good.
Yeah, and I don't think it was lip service either. I don't think it was him saying what he thought everybody wanted to hear. Like, I don't know that he necessarily cared what everybody wanted to hear. I think that's 100% who he is, I think.
Yeah, that's why I would say it was kind of a theme of the press conference, because it wasn't like that was his opening point that he wanted to make, or he didn't have a five-point plan in front of him. D'Amico had notes. Nick Cayley didn't have any notes. He just got up there, ready to go.
Spoke from the heart.
Yeah. So there wasn't anything necessarily breathtakingly, overwhelmingly revealing, except that, yeah, I thought it was very, very obvious that at his core, he's a guy that is way more focused on the blocking part of football than Bobby Slowick was.
Yep.
Whereas Bobby Slowick is a little bit more enamored of the whiteboard route tree concepts and whatnot.
I'm with you on that. There's some good takeaways from here. I thought DeMeco right out of the chute during the opening statement where he, you know, he's doing about 90 seconds leading in to the press conference. But literally like 10 seconds in, he pointed out that Nick Caley is not, quote, beholden to one scheme.
Yeah.
And I thought that was significant because I feel like one of the criticisms of Bobby Slowick was that he took this group of players and by hook or by crook, come hell or high water, he was going to jam them into his version of the Kubiak-Shanahan scheme.
Well, and the tough part about that is that there is a learning curve with all of that, and I was willing to be patient with it, but the catch is, it takes a lot of reps to get good at being in an outside zone-based scheme, and you've got to really be able to coach it up well. And they were horrendous at coaching it up. And a lot of that, I think, starts with Bobby Slowick being more of a passing game guy and not understanding just how hard it is to coach that scheme. And by the time he realized that they had to switch, it was too late.
Here was DeMeco Ryan's very first question in the press conference for him yesterday. Why Nick Caley?
Yeah, I talked to a lot of great people throughout this process, and just it was clear as I kept going through it, talking to people and going through my process, it was very clear that Nick was the right guy for our team. Just with his energy, right, his leadership ability, I think with him being able to understand the run game, pass game, with him being in multiple schemes that were successful, understanding how to tailor the offense to the players that we have, that led me to Nick. And I feel really strong in my conviction that he can lead us and get us over the hump. Right? We've had a lot of good success these first 2 years. And the reason for doing it is I think there's another level that we can go to. And so I said earlier, it's my job to take this organization to new heights. And I think hiring Nick will help us to get there.
The word leadership was used a few times by DeMeco. The thing I like about that is that usually you can't tell in an interview whether a guy's a good leader or not. Everybody can pass themselves off, or lots of people can pass themselves off as good leaders. When you read a leadership book, you write down some bullet points, and you say, this is exactly who I am. Usually that comes from word of mouth or endorsements by other people.
Yeah.
So I think Caley comes highly regarded from everybody that DeMeco talked to. And I do like that DeMeco talked to at least 8 people and probably more. You know, they had at least exploratory conversations with Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
So the fact that he talked to that many people and hopefully getting a little bit of an education, kind of an insight into a lot of future opponents and or just different ways to do things while he was doing that, that it's not for lack of searching that he found the candidate that he liked.
Well, and I know this is something you and I were texting about this yesterday, and I think, you know, one of the things, I think Landry asked him about comparing this search for an OC to the previous one. And I don't have that audio stacked up here in the open, but I think it's appropriate to bring it up now based on just how you and I are chatting about this, that it feels like DeMeco was able to be far more thorough in this vetting of his OC than he was the first time. And that's understandable. Like, you're putting a staff together. It's a fire hose of interview. Even though you may have had all the people in mind for years that you want to hire, some of those people aren't available, or, you know, the interview schedule is such that it's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot going on. It's almost like starting up a startup company, and you've told the investors, yeah, sure, we'll have a sales force hired by March the 15th, and 100 people hired, sure, no problem. And because it's so fast and it's such a fire hose, that 20 of those 100 people are not going to be great. And I think the same thing can happen in putting, and this isn't to say Bobby Slowick was trash or anything like that, but he obviously wasn't the perfect hire. He got fired 2 years in. This time around, everything else is in place. Like, this is the only thing, like, only high priority thing that you're really working on right now. You know what
I
mean?
Right. Well, and you think about the timeline of it, too, is DeMeco was coaching in the Super Bowl that year. So it like, and you know, he's gonna obviously be excited about his new opportunity with the Texans, but the main thing at that point is in his career is he's got to be focused on the Super Bowl and preparing for the Super Bowl. And then all of a sudden, boom, hey, sorry about your loss in the Super Bowl, but here you go, hire 28 people.
I think that was the year Brock Purdy hurt his arm in the NFC title game, but he's still coaching.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. But I mean, there's still a lot going on. I think there's still a lot going on.
I can't believe they hired a guy who couldn't even win the NFC championship game. My God.
Remember that game? Remember that game where Josh Johnson played the whole game because Brock Purdy tore his arm? So
and Brock Purdy came back in, remember?
Oh,
unable to feel his hand.
He's a hero, man.
What held you back in the passing game today? The stranger.
Lack of a hand. Yeah. Why did he come to Houston, Nick Cayley? He said, because of the people. Sorry, Ben. Kaylee Four.
Because of the people. Starting from ownership, to Coach Ryan's, to Nick, to the people, to the players, to the staff that we have here. I feel really convicted in that. And I think, you know, you got to get the right people on the bus, and we have the right people on the bus, and I'm really excited about that.
Okay, a couple things. One is, we already talked about, okay, the flurry that comes with a new coach hiring his staff. I wonder if for Cayley, part of it was that he turned down the job with the Patriots last year when it was a new staff. He was reportedly the leading candidate for the Jets, but he pulled himself out of that this year with a new staff. It's interesting that both those coaches were defensive-minded head coaches, too. And I think that everything that D'Amico said about the flurry of activity and trying to hire a staff, there might have been an appeal for Nick Cayley in thinking, okay, well, listen, the assistant defensive line coach I actually really like a lot. You've got people here in place. I know Casario. This feels a lot more stable and like where I can actually do some things compared to every other thing that led to Bobby Slowick kind of being a disappointment in a big way.
To make the startup comparison again, when you go to interview with the Texans, you're actually walking into a building where they've got five floors of it. They got a nice lobby. Everything's in place. They're publicly held. You go to the Jets or the New England Patriots, you're walking into a trailer where they still haven't even built the building yet. You know what I mean?
How many of these candidates for the Jets job had DMs in their inbox from Woody Johnson's kids making fun of them from like 2 years ago? Hey, this is Woody Johnson's kids. You're never going to work in this town, you bum.
And you know they introduce themselves as Woody Johnson's kid, not with their first name. You know they do that. So I think it was a short answer, but I think that's a great point. Like that, I didn't even think of that. I'm just thinking of the quality of the people in the building. It's a good building right now. It's good inside that building. But you're absolutely right that this is like kind of almost the fully built Death Star as opposed to the Death Star that still had a bunch of holes in it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that was good. D'Amico Ryans has zero apprehension over Nick Cayley not calling plays in the past.
Everybody has their first time. I was a first-time play caller. Right? There are a lot of guys who have their first time, so I wasn't beholden to or nervous about hiring someone who was their first time because it's about the person. And I think you get the right person to do the job, and I think I truly believe that Nick can do that. And it's play calling is also about who you surround yourself with, and I think we have a really strong staff offensively and defensively. We surround ourselves with the right people who can help when it comes to calling it for the first time.
Just by way of example, I think a couple guys that just because these guys pop up in my mind, not because I'm looking at Cayley as a Sean McVay guy, but Matt LaFleur and Mike McDaniel both left, went off on their own. And then LaFleur didn't have a great year with the Titans, but then they got the head coach job the next year and ended up doing very well as the head coach and offensive coordinator of the Packers. And then Mike McDaniel, obviously did very well on his own, him after leaving Shanahan. I'm not overly worried about it. It's one of those things that you flat out accept that you don't know until you see it in action.
Yeah. Well, that's a point you've made several times. It's like, look, there's a first time for everybody. And as soon as D'Amico said that, I was like, I remember Seth saying that. Like, that was like, at some point, everybody's had to have somebody take a chance on them. I don't feel like this is a major risk. I mean, I'm I was impressed with Kaylee yesterday. I really was. I thought he was excellent. And keep in mind, like, if we're just grading the press conference, he had a job with the Rams where he was not doing press conferences on a weekly basis.
Yeah, yeah.
He was good in front of a crowd. I think that he was good in front of a crowd, and I think it matters. Like, you're a coach. You're getting up in front of, you know, like, I do feel like there's an element of you've got to sell it, even when you're in front of the players, too. You know what I mean?
I think that it's... He seems like and he talked about how he took a lot, obviously, from both McVay and Belichick and working for them. And he feels like he's almost the exact medium between those two guys.
Yeah.
He's got a voice a little bit like McVay.
A lot like McVay, dude. Yeah. A lot like McVay.
He's not super, super smiley, but he's way more animated than Bill Belichick. But he also still has kind of that blue-collar feel to him. So he's a mix. Yeah.
All right.
He's a mixed breed. Which hybrids tend to be the best dogs, man.
They do, yeah. He's a mutt, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, two contract extensions are front and center right now. One for the Texans, one for the Astros. Both got attention from the media yesterday and from the people making these decisions, at least some attention for one of them. We'll talk about both of those coming up next. Also want to remind you, Slam Dunk in Vegas contest still going on for several more days. You got a chance to... enter to win. How do you enter? Just listen to us for an hour a day. Listen to Sports Radio 610 on the Odyssey app for an hour a day. And if you're the winner, you and three buddies are going to be on your way to Circa in Vegas to watch the college basketball tournament out there and have $20,000 in your pocket to do with whatever it is you want to do. Whatever it is people spend $20,000 on in Vegas, it's up to you, but you're going to have that $20,000 whether you like it or not. Circa's amazing. The sports book, the stadium swim, you're going to get to go and experience the whole thing if you're the winner of our contest. Just download the Odyssey app, listen for an hour each day, and you'll get your daily entry to the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
All right, so there's two contract extensions that were kind of in the news yesterday. I'll say in the news in so much as one of them was asked about during the Nick Kaylee press conference. This won't take long. D'Amico Ryans was asked about, hey, where are things at with Stephon Diggs?
We won't get into specifics on free agents. Like, that's a process that'll take its time, so I won't get into specifics on different guys.
Okay, so short answer, shuts it down, doesn't even say Diggs by name. Okay.
Technically, he's not a free agent.
Not a free agent either.
I feel like there was an answer given there, whether he intended to or not.
Translate. Give me your impression of it.
Diggs isn't technically a free agent until they have to release him to avoid paying him a bonus
just so people know why we're talking about this. Monday, February 17th, this coming Monday, Stephon Diggs' contract voids. It ends with the Texans, and there's $16 million and change sitting in future dummy years that all of a sudden that become a 2025 issue. They all hit the Texans in the face that day.
So the contract voids. They're not actively releasing them or anything. But it's an incentive for the Texans to maybe try to get out ahead of it and extend Stephon Diggs. If they want him back, there's practical reasons to pay him even more than you might think Stephon Diggs is worth, just because you're going to be paying that money anyway, so you might as well be getting something out of it if you actually want to bring him back. Now, if you're worried about him because of his age and his injury and everything else like that, I understand if they just take that dead money hit. That's honestly how I read into it from D'Amico, the fact that he basically... Because the question was specifically about Diggs, right?
It was indeed, yes.
Yeah. I mean, so he basically referred to him as a free agent, which it feels like they're probably discussing it. Like, that contract's going to void.
Yeah, I think the overall question with this is, you know, because we're left to translate or interpret that very brief answer by D'Amico. I think, Seth, if I was to say, if you're someone that wants to bring Diggs back, are you more optimistic or less optimistic that it's happening? Because I do want Diggs back. I think he's the best solution of that category of receiver. Like, guy who's done a lot, who's a little older, dealing with injuries, probably cheaper than he would normally be. I think Cooper Kupp is in that group. I think, in a way, Deebo Samuel is kind of in that group. You know, you'd have to trade for both of those guys. Maybe Devontae Adams kind of drifts into that. Diggs, for cost reasons and familiarity reasons, is the one that, to me, makes the most sense. So I want Diggs back at the right price. I am less optimistic that that is happening now based on that answer from D'Amico Ryans.
Yeah.
Because he's not a free agent, so it's not as though, like, he's not allowed to talk about Cooper Kupp if he got asked about Kupp. Asking about Kupp would have maybe been an appropriate thing yesterday because Nick Caley was in the building with Cooper Kupp the last 2 years. Now, you're not going to get an answer because it would be considered tampering. There's no tampering going on with Stephon Diggs, and every other opportunity that D'Amico has had to talk about Stephon Diggs, whether healthy or injured, he has gushed about him for 45 seconds at a time. Mm-hmm. He didn't even refer to him by name in that answer right there. He just said, we won't talk about free agents. So that's, so he's in the building, you know what I mean? So, yeah. You were gonna say something about that,
remember.
And I interrupted you. Sorry about that. So the other potential free agent a year from now, shifting over the Astros, is Framber Valdez, who met with the media yesterday via translator and was asked about his potential contract extension. And Framber Valdez says he has not talked to the team about a contract extension yet. Are you surprised that there's been no chatter between Framber and the Astros about a contract extension?
I am. I mean, just by virtue of them making their decision on Kyle Tucker, it feels like, all right, well, Framber's the one that you're going to lock down next. If he makes it to the season, which he's just upon us, I mean, you're getting closer and closer to just where he's going to decide to push it all the way out to free agency.
He should.
I guess, do I just have to accept the inevitable that Framber's not going to not long for the Astros? Is that it's someday he's going to leave?
How did you handle Tucker when it was a big topic of conversation, the contract extension? Were you accepting he was gone? Because to me, Kyle Tucker was more gone than Framber is. Kyle Tucker, we know, is looking for like one of those 10 or 12 year deals, which the Astros don't even step on the same playground, let alone play in that sandbox.
There's a part of me with the Astros pitchers where I know they bring guys in and they do incredible job at work with them to get them to the Garrett Cole level, or you know, Justin Verlander even really reclaiming some of his previous dominance and all of that. And there's a part of me that feels like at some point, just genuinely rewarding your homegrown prospects. Where guys aren't looking at it almost as, I think pitchers around the league look at the Astros as a place where like, I can go in there and they'll teach me up real good. Then I'll go make a boatload of cash somewhere else. I feel like you lose a little bit of something in just the culture of the place. And especially when Framber is maybe your best example of a guy that was so lost in so many ways as a young player.
Yes.
And they managed to reel him in and focus him and turn him into what he is now, which he's been clearly a top 10 pitcher in the league over the last three seasons.
No question.
In a lot of respects, a top five or higher pitcher. And But I've also resigned myself to the fate of pretty much every Astro is going to leave someday.
Yeah, I get it. The pitching thing adds to the dynamic. I don't know, man. Like, this is as consistent a pitcher as there's been, not just coming through the Astros, but in baseball over the last few years. Like, there is a luxury in knowing that you send a guy out there at the beginning of the season and he's going to get you 15 wins, an ERA somewhere in the high twos or low threes. I mean, maybe some seasons better. I mean, in the year they won the World Series, Framber, you could argue that he was right there with Verlander in terms of being a contender. Verlander won the Cy Young that year in 2022. Yeah. Framber Valdez was the most consistent pitcher in baseball that year. He literally threw a quality start 25 times in a row that year, and he hasn't done that again. But the aggregate of what he's been for the last four seasons, or since the COVID year, so four or five seasons, is that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like he's that. You can pencil him in for certain thresholds every year.
In the last three seasons, he's first in wins in the AL, sixth in ERA, and fifth in innings pitched.
Yeah.
Like that part of it, too, that he's been a workhorse. And he's been able to go deep during stretches when you need them to go. You need these guys to go deep into games.
Yep.
All of that is just something that we obviously all know. I think, much like Tucker, though, I think in terms of the fan emotion and sentiment, the difference between his regular season and his postseason is it's gotten kind of glaring.
Yeah.
And I think the feeling of, all right, okay, Framber has not been the same guy in the playoffs, that probably makes it a little easier emotionally.
A little bit. He's a bit of a weird one because he's had, when he's been bad in the playoffs, he's been really bad. When he's been good in the playoffs, he's been amazing. You know, like, it's been very up and down. Like, he's had good postseasons. The problem
is he's not like he's got some slump that he just, you know, that he sucks in the playoffs or anything.
Like, Kyle Tucker,
just hasn't been the same consistently awesome dude.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Tucker, the postseason for Tucker's been a problem, like, over the course of, like, entire postseasons the last two or three years. But it's a point well taken. Like, Framber is far from, in the postseason, you're right. Like, he's not, from a reliability standpoint, he's far from what he is in the regular season. No
right.
question.
He's not Clayton Kershaw earlier in his career.
Yes.
But he's not regular season Framber.
Yeah. So,
he Frambers too much in the playoffs.
He does. I'm just surprised that Framber was saying they hadn't any conversations about an extension yet, you know?
I feel like Framber's, my agent will take care of this type of guy. And his agent may have actually been in deep conversation with him and he wouldn't even know.
That's true.
He's just like, I'm off building a church back in my home city. There you go.
That's a great point. Alex Bregman, a day later, we know that Alex Bregman has agreed to terms with the Boston Red Sox, 3 years, $120 million. Joe Espada yesterday saying he's happy for Breggy.
I'm happy for Alex. I know the news are not official yet, but I'm happy for him. You know, he made his decision, so now it's time for all of us just to move forward and turn the page.
So there you go. So Espada's happy for him, and that's what you do. You got to move on. Now, Dana Brown was a little more guarded when he met with the media yesterday. Pitchers and catchers reported yesterday, for those who are unaware. They had a media day yesterday in West Palm Beach. Seth and I will be down in West Palm Beach about 10 days from now. Monday the 24th, we'll start off a week of shows from Astros.
With Spo Lane as well.
With Spo will be there as well. Yep. So that'll be fun. Dana Brown was asked about Bregman, and he was going a little more by the book. He said, I can't comment on that.
I've heard about it. I don't think it's official yet, but, you know, so I won't comment on that.
And then the follow-up was, oh, come on, give us something. So he said this.
If it's true, you know, I'm happy for Bregman. You know, he had a great run here, you know, and so that's all pretty much I can say about it.
Okay. So Dana Brown not as effusive in his joy for Alex Bregman, it looks like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, he's very careful about not running he doesn't want to screw up the CBA type stuff. Yeah. You know, like and I think that accounts for a lot of the ways he was speaking almost mystically about the prospects of Alex Bregman coming back.
Yeah,
here. They're not allowed to say that they're out on a free agent, so he didn't want to say that conclusively.
Right, so he would say, yeah, we're still having internal conversations while doing the wanking motion with his left hand. He didn't do that.
You know what he had said yesterday? I don't have the audio of it, but that got me thinking about Altuve even in more in depth in left field.
Yeah.
When he talked about the challenge of playing left field, think about Mr. Base Running Error, Jose Altuve. When you think about this quote from Dana Brown, you've got the elements of base runners throwing the ball and keeping double plays in order. We'll see how that goes. I'm like, oh boy. Yeah. All right. You know, at second base, it's right there in front of you. You've got like physical obstructions as you're playing second base to remind you of exactly where you should go with the ball and everything. Left field, it's a lot to keep track of.
Yeah.
It feels a little bit like Altuve taking too big a lead or not tagging up or something. Yeah, I get nervous about that part.
Oh, my God.
Of it.
Yeah, he's throwing it to second when you're trying to you're supposed to be gunning down a guy at third. guy's tagging up on a sack fly, and he's just tossing it back into second base instead of trying to get him out at home.
They think I can't throw to first from left field. I'll show them.
Watch this.
Watch this.
So,
just losing track of
who. Yeah, he's just showing off.
I thought the center fielder was the cutoff guy.
Oh my God.
I don't know. I mean, we have to take that into account. Altuve's got some of the most egregiously bad base running errors we've ever seen in baseball, and we largely forgive him for it.
Oh,
but in left field, it would be that much harder.
You just torpedoed my morning with that. Payne and Pendergast with you. Texts rolling in on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. MLB win leader since 2020. Framber Valdez. Yep. We pointed out the consistency with the stats. For sure. I don't understand why you wouldn't trade Framber and get maximum return if you're not going to sign him. The Astros window could have been open a lot longer, and they traded guys in their final year to restock the farm system. I think the Astros are trying to play the middle on this one. I think trading Tucker trading Tucker made sense. I don't think they were just going to unconditionally trade Kyle Tucker. I think it was very specific to the package that the Cubs were able to offer them, because the Bregman leaving, which I think they've known is going to happen for a long, long time. So I think the first sign that Bregman was, the first outward sign of moves they were making, where you knew Bregman wasn't coming back, was them trading Kyle Tucker to get Isak Paredes here to play third base. To me, in retrospect, that's what it was. I think trading Tucker, it had to be the right package. And in that package, you got an all-star third baseman. You got a starting pitcher who has real potential that you feel like is a pitcher that could go through your car wash with his stuff and become one of those next guys. And a high-level prospect in Cam Smith. I don't think they were putting Kyle Tucker on the auction block. I think this was a very specific Cubs thing. So I think they're kind of playing the middle on this thing, where if the right deal comes up, you trade a guy. I think the right deal came up where they felt like it would keep them competitive in the short term and would make them competitive in the long term. They would trade Framber, too. That deal just doesn't exist
right now. It's a good point. They're not in fire sale mode.
Correct.
They're not trying to tank over the next two seasons. So they've got a, I think they're gonna treat each situation as, all right, can we stay competitive when we get this deal with Kyle Tucker? They got guys back who can help immediately and in the future, especially if Cam Smith works out. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, Cam Smith, he's just a prospect at this point, but people are very, very high on Cam Smith.
Oh, yeah.
I think when it comes to Framber, I think it's a great point, Sean. Yeah. I don't think that he's untouchable or that they wouldn't trade him.
Yeah.
And it could even be an in-season trade, depending on what they get back from him and where the Astros are. If they feel like it, they can still compete. And with that, remember, with Framber, maybe they're totally open to trading Framber. They want to see what Luis Garcia, Christian Javier, Lance McCullers, where those guys are by the trade deadline.
I hadn't even thought about that. That's a really good point.
If you've got the opposite of the pitcher help that they had last year, if you've got really healthy pitchers as you approach the trade deadline, I think there's a very good possibility Framber gets traded.
If the package includes one or two major league ready guys who are under team control for 3 or 4 years, as opposed to Framber, who's under control for another 6 months, and a couple prospects, that's a package I think they would listen to for Framber Valdez, for sure. All right, headlines. The Nick Caley press conference, we'll keep digging into that. One of the strangest Rockets games of the year. They lost. It was one of the strangest and more entertaining games last night against Golden State. We'll get to all that in headlines coming up next.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme. From serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's start with the Texans. They introduced Nick Caley, their new offensive coordinator, in a press conference yesterday. We'll dig into more specific things at the top of the hour with Nick Caley. Here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday, Texans head coach, on what he was looking for in hiring a new offensive coordinator.
I went in with an open mindset, Kim, and I learned a lot from a lot of sharp coaches. I learned a lot just seeing how guys put things together, how guys adjusted and adapted to what they were from their schemes, what they were able to do. So I went in with an open mind, but also went in with the idea of the right person who can lead us, right, in the right direction, get everybody going in the same direction, can help our quarterback the most, help us with where we had our issues, of course, with our protection. We know we can clean that up. Just all a well-rounded football coach, right? And that's Nick. Nick has coached multiple positions. He's coaching on the defensive side. He understands how to attack schemes. He understands how to put guys in the right position. Right? Understand how to adjust it to make sure it's favorable to our players and making sure they are able to accentuate their strengths. And that's what it was about for me.
A lot of themes yesterday, Seth. We pointed out a few of them in the first hour here. One that in that cut, especially towards the end right there, got pointed out that was highlighted many times in that press conference. Tailoring whatever it is they do to the personnel that they have.
Right. Yeah. And that, you know, you got to lean into what guys are good at. But there is also a part of it, too, where, I mean, like, simple pass protection is, like, scheme doesn't matter as much with that. Caley made a couple points about guys communicating and being on the same page. That was a clear and obvious issue with the Texans last year.
Yep.
And I know we get, like, every time I talk about the offensive line, there's people that want to swap out all five offensive linemen. Listen, if the problem was with the actual physical ability of all five offensive linemen, then Bobby Slowick would still have a job. The one big thing that I took away from yesterday with Nick Caley in that press conference was just by the nature of his answers to questions that weren't even about the offensive line. He is a guy that cares very much about the fundamentals of blocking, of not making mental errors, all of those things. And to a much greater degree than Bobby Slowick, he's about the nuts and bolts of executing things properly, no matter what type of scheme you're running. So I think the offensive line will likely play a lot better. Now, I think there will be some changes. I think that I put the over-under on number of new starters at 1.5 right now.
On the O-line,
but,
yeah.
But if you had to swap out all five guys, like, that's, it's just, no, there's not that. Those guys physically are not as bad. Those guys were playing with horrible fundamentals at times last year. And sometimes that's because the position coaching isn't good. Sometimes that's because the offensive coordinator is asking them to do things that they're confused about. But there were too many mental errors. There were too many just blown protections, especially early in the year, that I don't think are going to be as much of an issue with Nick Caley. Because Nick Caley's been a tight ends coach who's very involved in pass protection,
yeah,
as well as the pass game. So I feel a lot better about that.
We'll dig into that more at the top of the hour. D'Amico and Nick Caley both had interesting things to say about the offensive line from a coaching perspective and an execution perspective. We'll get to that at the top of the hour. The Rockets last night lose on the back end of a back-to-back. They lost to a team whose coach was whining about back-to-backs the night before. That bothered
me. Steve Kerr was whining about
something?
Can
you believe he was whining?
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Okay.
105-98, the final score. This was maybe the weirdest Rockets game of the year because they were dead in the water about midway through the third quarter. Like, they were atrocious in the first half of this game, turning the ball. When I say turning the ball over, it's not like, you know, shuffled your feet and traveled. Like, they couldn't inbound balls. They were inbounding basketballs that were bouncing off of people and rolling out of bounds. Like, it was Keystone Cops type stuff. And so they're down by 12.
Well, but they also, look, he put the Stay Ready crew in there at the end of the second quarter, and they went on a 13-1 run.
Right.
So, like, they had salvaged some of it. And Udoka figures, okay, we'll give the starters a chance again in the third quarter.
And then they coughed it right back up.
Yeah.
And so the Rockets get back into this game, as Seth points out, both at the end of the second quarter, and then once the starters came back in and looked equally as disengaged as they did in the first half, he gets back into this game, Udoka, with a lineup that was Aaron Holiday, Chuck Lawndale, Nate Williams, who even Craig Ackerman and Ryan Hollins are both like, wow, Nate Williams is coming in. Whoa. Jayshon Tate, Jeff Green. Eventually, he put Amen Thompson back in because I feel like Amen Thompson is the one guy in the regulars that's above benching just because effort's never really an issue with him. So eventually, you know, you had to have at least one good player in the game. But they got back to within two with that crew out there. Now, Seth, I guess the question would be, once you get back within two on a night where you've completely benched the starters, not once but twice, is it appropriate then to see if the starters can bring this ship into shore, or do you just let happen what happened? So you make a point, is what you're
saying.
They
sit there and they think about their lack of aggression and physicality and all of these things that they have just kind of... I hate that so many things about this team right now are the classic cliche, totally the thing that happens when you have a little bit of success with younger players on your team.
Yeah.
They forget. They just forget. They don't realize, like, oh, we're not actually as good as we thought we were.
Right.
And damn it, now all those all the people that cautioned and warned about the fact that, hey, like, it's not that easy. It gets tougher when teams really start taking things seriously. Yeah, they've succumbed to all of that.
Well,
they needed and they come back with no games. Last game before a break, you had a nice win the night before, and it's just every damn classic this is what happens thing happens.
And the exclamation point on all of it is it's Steph Curry knocking down just two dagger threes in the last 4 minutes to see, like, that it's that guy who's been the most clutch player of the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just a reminder that you played so poorly. It's like, yeah, you know who you're on the business end of right now? This guy who's great, whose team is on a back-to-back on the road where they lost to the freaking Mavericks the night before. I mean, you should have been ready, and they weren't ready to play last night, man.
I was just, I support anything Udoka wants to do there to try to beat some sense into his younger players.
Right.
Yeah, you did this. You're sitting on the bench. You did this to yourselves.
Yep.
Yeah, we're losing this game because you guys decided not to play basketball.
Except for Amen.
Tonight.
Amen, you get back in there. We need at least one good player in to try to get this thing, to try to win this game. We mentioned this in the previous segment, but the Astros pitchers and catchers report yesterday. There's other guys down there, too. I saw Chaz doing some locker room. That was good to see. Good to see Chaz getting down there early.
We'll hear Chaz body type analysis.
No, I could only see from sternum up. It was one of those deals. But you and I will get to do that in person when we go there in 10 days.
You know, with Henry Toa, you could tell that he'd made a body transformation just by his face.
Yeah.
He had like a chiseled face, whereas before it had been kind of a doughy college kid face.
Chaz looks the same in the face, for what it's worth, yeah. The only news really coming out of there, other than people commenting about how happy they are for Alex Bregman, they may or may not be lying, I have no idea. Framber Valdez, we touched on this in the previous segment, says the team has not approached him about a contract extension. So as we go through our annual ritual of which big name free agent is going to leave the Astros, Framber Valdez moves to front and center, and it hasn't gotten a lot of attention, I feel like, because he was on the same calendars as Kyle Tucker. Tucker's free agency journey, potential free agency journey, got way more attention. So Framber was almost forgotten in all this. Well, now Framber, this is the new extension that's getting dangled over our head all year long, you know?
Right. And that as you pointed out earlier, I think that just as it was with Kyle Tucker, I think the Astros are as they themselves have said, they're open to trading anybody at this point. There's basically no untouchables. And they just, if they got the right deal for Framber, and if Luis Garcia is healthy and on track and appears and it looks like, okay, we can trust him, depending on how they feel about Christian Javier right now. I think that could happen. If it's something that it's not a fire sale, but they don't feel that they get worse as a team right now and in the future, they might do it.
Yep. They're playing the middle on this. They're trying to stay competitive across the board, not just create for the future. All right, into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Seth mentioned the offensive line, big theme yesterday in the Nick Caley press conference. We got to hear from D'Amico Ryans why Cole Popovich as the new offensive line coach. And I thought Caley did a great job of highlighting. I don't think he was pointing fingers at last year's Texans, but in kind of expressing some of his philosophies. For me, it was a lot of nodding of the head, like, yeah, that was a big issue last year. See if you agree. Play along. We'll play some of that Nick Caley coming up here in the 7 o'clock hour. Stay there.